My name is Dennis Deneau, and I am the chair of the League of Women Voters. With that, I am going to tell you a little bit about the League of Women Voters before we get started. The League of Women Voters has a mission. Our mission is empowering voters and defending democracy. We have a vision. We envision a democracy where every person has the desire, the right, the knowledge, and the confidence to participate. We have a value. We believe in the power of women to create a more perfect democracy. Okay. The League of Women Voters of Washington endorses a yes vote on R88 regarding I-1000. I-1000 was passed by the legislature. A yes vote will reestablish affirmative action without quotas in public education, employment, and contracting. The League of Women Voters would appreciate a yes vote on that. I want to thank the people in the back room who are helping with the sound, Gary Imbrick, Sonny Flores, and David Kurland. I videotape all these forums, and they are available on my YouTube station, Dennis Deneau, D-A-N-E-A-U. They're available on that station. You go to YouTube, go to the search window, put in my name, and you will find this forum and other forums. I didn't say that David was with KPTZ, and they're recording tonight, so that you can also listen to this on KPTZ. You could call the station to find out when they're going to air it. We believe that these forums provide a chance for voters to have the information they need to make the vote that they want to make. So we're happy to be doing this. So with that, I think I'm finished with my part of this, and I want to introduce Catherine Buchanan, and she is the public policy director of the AAUW, the American Association of University Women. Catherine?
Thank you very much. I want to clarify that's the Port Townsend AAUW. All right. So the Port Townsend AAUW has celebrated its 72nd year. And this year is also the 100th anniversary for women's suffrage. We support the STEM program in all the schools, math programs, reading. We have given away this year over $50,000 in scholarships to East Jefferson County. And we support participating in your government by co-sponsoring forums like this. Thank you all for being participants, and we welcome you tonight. I would like to introduce our moderator for tonight, Shelley Randall.
Thank you all for being here tonight. What a great crowd. We are going to learn a lot tonight, and I look forward to an engaging conversation. So my name is Shelley Randall. I'm a city resident, and I like to call myself a community booster. These candidates we are about to meet and get to know tonight have taken it one big step further. They filed to fill a seat on the Port Townsend City Council. So this is our 7-member board. They serve for 4-year terms, and 4 of the 7 seats are up for election in November. Okay, then, we are going to get started, and I am going to have Ms. Howard begin with her opening statement of 2 minutes.
Hello, everybody. My name is Amy Howard, and I am running for the Port Townsend City Council for the second time. I have enjoyed my time on council, and I feel like I'm just getting started doing the work that I actually want to do on council. It takes a little bit of time to come up to speed, to feel like you're actually knowing what you're talking about and doing all of the homework appropriately, and then you can get off and running. I'm now serving on several committees on council, which is where I really like to do the work. I am the chair of the Finance and Budget Committee. As I said the last time I was in this room, I love budgets. Additionally, I sit on the Rules Committee and the Affordable Housing Committee. And those are the places where I have enjoyed doing the most work. I am running for Port Townsend City Council again because I very much care about this community. It has taken care of me in some of the hardest and darkest times of my life, and I really want to continue to return that favor. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. And let's actually, we're going to hold our applause. I should have said that. Otherwise, there might be a lot of applauding tonight. So please, no applause. So without further ado, Mr. Arthur, your opening statement, please.
Hi, I'm Bernie Arthur, and some of you know me, some don't. But I am running for city council because I am concerned about a lot of the spending that's been going on in the city and the affordability of the housing and the affordability of just living in the city anymore. And I don't see any indication that anybody in the city council, other than the retiring city councilman, has any opposition to any spending like down at the Chamber of Commerce, 800,000 or 600, whatever number you want to pick. How is it going to help the people with an RV pull in and go ask for information? And there's so many things that I analyze, maybe overanalyze, that I think we have a tendency in society nowadays to accept the loudest voice or the person with the most reputation. And I feel that we need to have people who speak in a normal tone of voice, who look at the system and what we can do to make it better for us and for our children and for our grandchildren. And there's an old saying, the law of diminishing returns. You can keep charging more and charging more, but eventually you fail. And we need to look at how we can cut costs, especially for the affordable housing. I built houses here over the years, and I can't believe the time it takes to get a permit, time's up. You're lucky. I'm done.
Okay, thank you. It's a challenge. It's a challenge to be up here and time it all. Well, we're going to start with a question that's general in nature because I feel like the opening statements just give us a taste for each candidate. So I'd like you each to answer, starting with Mr. Arthur. What unique qualities about yourself, your experiences, and or your education separate you from the other seeker of this office? Please tell us a bit more about yourself and what makes you...
Well, I don't want to oppose my candidate here. I'll just tell you what I've done. I've been on the Planning Commission, the Shoreline Commission, the OPIC, which is the Private Entrance Fee Council. I've been a volunteer over the years. I've ran three businesses, boat building when there was nothing down at the port. Now it's full of boat builders. We encourage that. And I sold real estate for a while, but I'm kind of have difficulty with government regulations that mean nothing to make things better. They just are regulations to satisfy staff or whatever. And so there were many things when I was on the Planning Commission or the Shoreline Commission, somebody'd come in and want to build something on the shoreline, so we'd all jump in our car and we'd drive out and make suggestions and add ideas and help them make a good... The regulations might say you have to sit 300 feet or 10 miles or whatever from the shoreline, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's...
Well, finish your sentence. Sorry. That is...
My problem is that I talk too much.
All right. Well, he'd cede the mic. All right, and I'm just going to ask, would it be better if each candidate stood up from the back? I'm going to request you do this. So, Ms. Howard, would you like me to repeat the question?
Yes, please.
Okay, just tell us what unique qualities about yourself, your experiences, and or your education separate you from the other seeker of this office.
I have worked in nonprofits for the past 20 years, the majority of that time in the boiler room, where I started as a volunteer and ended as the executive director when it closed a year ago. I have served on several nonprofit boards in Port Townsend, and I have just started on Monday as the temporary volunteer coordinator for Habitat for Humanity as their volunteer coordinator goes on maternity leave. Additionally, I'm starting a new business called the Community Redistribution Center, where I take things that people don't want anymore and I find the right nonprofit to donate them to. And my experience with nonprofits in towns makes that a lot easier. Additionally, I have earned my certificate of municipal leadership from the Association of Washington Cities, and I am on my way to earning the advanced certificate. I have also a graduate of the Nonprofit Executive Leadership Institute at the University of Washington.
Thank you. All right, another general question just to get us kicked off here. And Ms. Howard, you get to start again.
Back up.
What priorities do you have for your term on the council?
I would like to continue my work on the Affordable Housing Committee. That's where I've become the most educated recently. I have been attending the Washington Housing Alliance conferences and been taking courses there to figure out ways that we can use the models in other cities to help Port Townsend. We don't have to reinvent the wheel, it turns out. Additionally, I would like to continue work on the communication plan for the city and continue to figure out ways to engage the citizenry in more respectful and more ongoing ways. I am really proud of the city's new website, and I would love to see us actually engage on social media as well.
Thank you. Mr. Arthur, I'll repeat the question. Did you stand?
The thing that I looked at when I put my name down was that 5,000 people out of 7,800 didn't even vote in the last election. So whoever got elected was only about 30% of the voters, available voters. 5,000 people didn't vote. So my point is that if I get elected, the first thing I want to do is make the city feel like it's helping the people, not that you're incurring their wrath from going in and asking a question. I've tried to talk to the city attorney for written letters. I never get a response after 2 years. And it's just a simple question. Those people that work at City Hall are our employees.
Thank you. All right, now we'll turn to a few audience-submitted questions. What kinds of changes are you looking forward to with our new city manager? And I'm sure all of you have been keeping up to date on this, but John Morrow will be starting here at the end of the year after this election, and so the question again is, with you starting, Mr. Arthur, what kinds of changes are you looking forward to with our new city manager?
I started when my time was up, but the city manager should be out in the public, seeing what people are thinking, talking to people, being involved with community, and understanding what the problems and what the goals and objectives are of the people. I didn't find that in the last city manager. I never saw him anywhere. It was like he was there and that was his job, but he didn't respond to. I took stuff down to him and I'd say, "Here's an idea. Why don't you pursue this?" And I'd come back a month later and he wouldn't even have a copy of it. I like to be involved with people, and I like to have people talk, not at a big meeting like this, like we're doing right now, but I call it management by walking around. You time's up again.
So 1 minute on what are you looking forward to with our new city manager?
So Mr. Arthur is correct. I am also looking forward to a more forward-facing and publicly engaged city manager. In addition, one of the reasons that I was very excited about hiring John is his background in sustainability. And as the sustainability director for the city of Auckland, I am looking forward to seeing what he can bring to Port Townsend to help prepare us for climate change, for general ways in which we can actually increase the sustainability and productivity of actual the city offices. And I think that he will charm the socks off of all of you eventually.
All right, thank you. Okay, now for 2 minutes, and maybe the candidates won't have to talk quite so quickly. So I'm still here. We're going to ask another question. Actually, I like this one. This ties in nicely with this because it's about... Yes, you are back up. It's about how the city interacts with other local government agencies. So, Ms. Howard, for 2 minutes, please discuss the ways in which the city of Port Townsend, and this is more really just your take on what the city can do, I would say, how we can interface with the county, the fire districts, the port, the hospital, GEFCOM, et cetera.
Well, the experiences that I've had in interfacing with other government entities have actually been fairly positive. I know that there's the stigma that nobody gets along, and I have found that if everybody goes in really willing to have a discussion, that that's not necessarily the case. There are definitely areas where we butt heads a little bit, but the main thing is everybody's having an equitable discussion. I don't feel like any electeds are feeling more fancy or more elected than anybody else, and I have had very positive discussions. Additionally, this past spring, we were able to have a workshop with the tribe to figure out how to have a better conversation with them in the future, and that was really, really illuminating.
Thank you. Mr. Arthur, would you like me to repeat
it? Ask me the question again.
Sure.
I think I got lost.
Please discuss the ways that the city of Port Townsend can interface with our other local government agencies, like the county, the fire districts, the port, the hospital, GEFCOM, et cetera.
Well, I think it's all based on, I've been involved with the port for many years, and I, not as an elected official or anything, but the interesting thing to me is I kind of watch it, and I think it's one trying to victimize the other rather than how can we all work together to accomplish common goals that's good for the community. And I could start, but I'll run out of time, I'm sure. But the biggest point is that these people at the port, the people at the city, the people at the hospital, the people at the school district, they're all our employees. They should be happy to get together and accomplish common goals and stuff. I'm not too sure that that happens all the time because of ego or self-esteem. Am I done again? Okay. But I don't have those problems, so when I have a question, I just go directly to the port manager or the port, and I say, why don't we do this or why don't we do that? If they don't do it, it doesn't bother me. I've done my job as a citizen to have input. So if you think like I do, you would think that everybody should be happy to see us and happy to work together, and we're paying their wages. I mean, let's face it, it's not coming from some other place. We are paying those people to work, and we should be able to give them ideas, not hollering and screaming and not having parades and all the rest of it, but just common, down to earth, talk to one another in a I'm done.
Okay. And stay standing because you get to answer the next question.
I
think you led into it really well, Mr. Arthur, because you actually started to talk about being a citizen advocate and approaching our local government entities. This question from the audience is, how does the role of a citizen advocate change when that private citizen is elected to represent everyone in their new government role? How do you see that would change for you if elected, going from citizen advocate to elected official?
It wouldn't. I have no qualms at all. I think the people that are elected, there's some here, they're supposed to be working for all the people. They're not, I'm a Democrat, or I'm a Republican, or I'm a progressive, or I'm this, or I'm that. There's 9,000 people in this town that need help. Some need help, some need housing, some need... They should be going out of their way, staying up nights, figuring out how to solve those problems. It's not a case of me changing. I'm going to be the same. If I was elected, there would be a lot of people who might... When I was on commissions, there were people that would come and they would holler and scream, and I'd say, "Sit down. I don't listen to people like that. I listen to people who have a thoughtful input into the discussion." And because government is not doing that, that's why we get the parades, the rebellious people, the all this stuff, because they're not being heard, they're not being considered, they're not being talked to and helped from their position. Now, that doesn't mean everybody has the right idea, but I might not have the right idea, but because I'm open-minded, I'm willing to listen to other people and analyze what position I should be in. And when I was in business, we'd have a board of directors and everybody be sitting around, and three or four people would be telling us what we should do and what we should do. And I always called on the people that never said anything, because they always had the best idea.
Thank you. I'll repeat it again. How does the role of a citizen advocate change when the private citizen is elected to represent everyone in their new government role?
My job has become to really take the effort to increase my breadth and depth of knowledge across all the sectors and figure out what the best thing for the most people is going to be. And I can't do that without both taking the time to really do my homework and taking the time to talk to people and to find outside resources. I've been sent a significant number of links from Strong Towns in the past 4 years, and I have started listening to that podcast, and I find it incredibly useful. But I've also taken the time to go to outside conferences to find that information to bring back into Port Townsend, to not try to do my work in isolation, and to take the time to figure out how to have conversations with people that make me uncomfortable. It's not about what I need, even though it's also about what I need, because I'm also a resident and citizen of Port Townsend. But again, it's that figuring out what the best thing for the most people is going to be.
All right, great. I have one more general question. It's also audience submitted, and then we can dive into some more issues. But I think this is a good one to wrap up that general piece on. I'm editing this slightly from what the writer wrote to make it a little more specific. And it's really, would you please talk about the city's budget? Okay, you're not going to explain it, I don't think, here in your 2 minutes. It says please explain, but please talk about the city's budget, how you see the city councils affecting that, and also how you feel that citizens should have input in the process. So, 3-part.
That is a more than 2-minute question, guys. Don't need to know where to start with an overview. This is a document that takes many, many months to prepare, that we have to figure out how to get the most bang for the buck out of all of the various funds. So I mean, the city of Port Townsend has funds that vary from the water and sewer, which has restricted uses, to the general fund. So I think that in the coming year, when we start to have the discussion about how and when we are going to choose to levy the funds from the fire district annexation, I think that that will provide more opportunity for public input into the budget process than we've ever really invited before. And so I'm looking forward to having those conversations about what budget priorities are for the city of Port Townsend and the residents of Port Townsend. However, it's always been an open process, and I would invite people to join the Finance and Budget Committee meetings on the final Tuesday of every month at 3 p.m. in chambers. And I would love to answer questions that are more specific about the budget.
All right, thank you. Yes, broad question, but do your best here. So, Mr. Arthur, can you please talk about the city's budget as you see it, how councillors should be involved in that, and how citizens can have input?
From what I know about it, I never analyzed it further than the fact that it's the city's spending far more than they're taking in, which means that they're going to go bankrupt unless they start charging more. And if they start charging more, less and less people will be able to afford to live here. And so I think that they need to consider, and I would certainly consider, cutting costs as opposed to raising sewer rates or garbage rates or, you know, every time you open a bill, it's got a city charge on it, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, what are we paying for? Are we paying for good services and stuff, or are we just continuing on? I mean, you look downtown and you see stormwater catchment basins every 20 feet, and you wonder how are they maintained, and is it really that bad, the rainfall in Port Townsend? Or is it just somebody's idea to create employment for government employees? I would look at every single item and decide whether it was necessary or not. And I would not ever vote for something like the Golden Triangle. That would drive me nuts, because it doesn't accomplish the goals of, and we could have just gave the land to the chamber and walked away. Wouldn't it cost $600,000 or $700,000? And you go down and the Seroptimists have a nice little triangle there that they take care of. Doesn't cost us anything. You go up the hill, and on the right, there's a gardener's triangle that's taken care of by them. We're not paying for it.
Time's up.
You get me started.
But we have a new question that actually, I think you can continue speaking on this topic a bit more. So, all right, budget question, and Mr. Arthur, you get to answer this one first.
My turn again.
Yeah, your turn again. You get to talk about your thoughts on the city updating Water Street. Including in my mind, in some ways, the new park you were just talking about, so you can tie that in. And how come the city never fixes the residential streets? So I know that's a common concern, and so you get to speak about Water Street, maybe versus residential streets. You choose.
Well, I thought Water Street was kind of fun to drive on in the old days, but now I get to dodge around all those manholes that are in the road. And I don't know what they're for. And then I look at the Port Townsend is a historic seaport, but I can't see the buildings for the trees. And I think, is that really what we should be doing? I mean, you look at the old pictures of Port Townsend, and the only reason that all those buildings are there is because the economy went somewhere else and nobody was doing any business in Port Townsend except the paper mill. And so when Penny's was downtown and Safeway was downtown and stuff, those buildings are still there. And you go to other cities and they tear them down and build duplexes or whatever. We should be celebrating the Victorian seaport idea and not covering it up. And so you take that and you say, one time I went to the city, we lived on Haines Street when we moved here, and it was a ruddy place, and the city didn't have any money, but they had all these employees and all these vehicles and stuff, and I said, I'll buy the blacktop, do the street. Oh, no, we can't do that. We have to have a committee. We have to have all this stuff. That street is 50 years since I got here, and it's still the same. It's still the same. And when you want to build something, and you say, I'm going to build a house over here, well, you got to put sidewalks and bike paths and parking lots and all this stuff in, when all you really need to do is just repave the street.
Okay, time is up.
Hey, I made it.
I'm going to repeat the question exactly as it was written for Ms. Howard. Why did the city update Water Street, and how come the city never fixes the residential streets?
Underneath Water Street, there was a failing water main. We took the opportunity while replacing that failing water main to do updates to Water Street itself and to fix what was also failing pavement at the time. In doing so, we had an opportunity to do some additional updates like the benches along, I want to call it Swain's, Quimper Mercantile. We got a grant that allowed us to do that. We are not able to take that same money and use it on residential streets. That wouldn't be legal or ethical to do so. We have started a pavement management program to figure out an inventory where all of the updates and repairs are needed, and it alone is quite an intensive project. We've started working on some of the streets to figure out what the best solutions are, which is why you saw like work in front of the post office on Washington this year. It takes a lot of money to do residential streets, and there's not a lot of money in that pot. And we was talking about budgets earlier where there's funds where we can't access that money for other things. So the overall budget of the city of Port Townsend might be this huge number, but inside of that, there's smaller numbers that we have to work within. So we are continuing to put money towards the local roads. It's just not going to make a huge visible difference right away, unfortunately. And I live on 14th Street. So I can finish the sentence, but not the thought. I live on 14th Street, so I definitely experience this every day as well.
Thank you. I appreciate both of you sticking within the time limits. It means we have time for more questions like this one. The property tax no longer needed for the fire district seems like a backdoor tax increase. How would you assure that this tax revenue is used only for community needs?
When the annexation took place, the city made a contract with the fire department. If we levy the funds in more than the one-third, one-third, one-third agreed amounts, that money is directly forfeit to the fire department. So if we were to tax you more than the agreed amount, we have to turn around and give that money directly to the fire department. So that would not be beneficial for anybody except the fire department. That was put in place as an agreement with the residents of Port Townsend as a way to assure that the money is levied in the proper amounts and used for the proper things. If for some reason we were to say, oh, we don't think that we want to use it for the six things that we have outlined, we have to make that amount of a payment to the fire district.
Thank you. Mr. Arthur, would you like me to repeat the question?
No.
Okay.
When this came up a while back, my simple mind went to the fact that we're paying taxes to the county for the fire department now because they took it over. And the city wants to continue the tax, but I call it taxation without representation. It's double taxation for the same service, supposedly. Now, if they want to make it for a lot of other things, that's fine. I don't care. But they should put it up to a vote. The problem with this money shows up on the table and they don't want to give it back, they want to spend it. They don't want to give us any returns on our taxes. And if you think that we can spend that money on other subjects, then that's fine. But we voted for it to be for the fire department, not for all these other things. And it's just a pool that they can grab the money out of, because one thing that I don't know if all of you know, that a city is entitled to do anything illegal they want to until you take them to court. And to go to court nowadays costs lots of money. I've done it. So you're not going to take them to court. But the law is kind of how we're supposed to live our lives. You know, if the law says this, that's what it is. You can't change it because you're a city. You don't have to abide by the rules unless somebody takes you to court. My time's up again.
Okay, you can stay standing, Mr. Arthur. I hope I get this question right. I reworded it slightly, but please share your position on setting term limits for elected and appointed positions on our city council, which I understand we don't have now. Is that correct? We don't have term limits, per se, so you can run for city council as many times as you want. So share your position on setting the term limits for our city council.
Well, the idea of term limits has always been, in my mind, I grew up in Seattle and I was a Democrat and involved with the Democrats when I moved here, ran the Democratic Convention, and then I decided that they were changing, so I changed to Republican for a while, and then I changed to I'm going to figure it out for myself. I'm not going to have people tell me. And the hard thing about all of this stuff is that people, I used to tell state senators and stuff, I says, why don't you pay a guy till his retirement if he figures out how to eliminate his job? Because there's a lot of people working in government that are creating work. They're not there to accomplish what I consider work, because running businesses, I know what I'm doing. But the fun thing about it is to watch it, to watch the people who manage, the elected officials, all of them. It's kind of like their security blanket is to control all you guys. I'm going to tell you how to mow your lawn, how to do this and do that. A kid in my front yard couldn't have a lemonade stand because you have to have a city permit. But a guy can come to town and beg money on the street with no permits, no regulations, no nothing. So where are we headed? Are we headed to a democracy with everybody having their time up?
Okay. Mr. Arthur, you certainly can finish your sentence.
No, I'm done.
So Ms. Howard, I'm going to repeat the question. And as I understand it, it is talking about city council term limits. So share your position on setting term limits for elected and appointed positions on our city council.
I believe that there is a distinct benefit to having institutional knowledge on council. there's been a number of times where I've appreciated the input from council members who have been there for a long time and knew what the original intent of something was. I believe that it is absolutely your job to decide when somebody is done on council, in addition to them, you know, being able to retire. I guess so that the short statement is, I don't feel like it's necessary if we have engaged residents and citizens.
And will you tell us, you're going, this would be a second term for you, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So having served one term, going into a second. So have a seat for a moment because we are going to move to the mic.
My name is Jane, and I'm with the Jefferson County Move to Amend. In 2012, Port Townsend was the first city in Washington State to pass a resolution for a constitutional amendment to establish that constitutional rights apply to natural persons only and not to corporations, and that campaign contributions are not speech and must be regulated. It would reverse Supreme Court decisions like Citizens United and control the growing power of corporations.
Yeah, what is your question?
If elected, are you committed to supporting the movement for a constitutional amendment to end corporate personhood and money as speech?
So that is the question, and Ms. Howard, you will go first.
Absolutely.
Mr. Arthur?
I have been running for city council, and I haven't taken any contributions, and I don't intend to. The thing that worries me about politicians and our government is the fact that when a person's elected to an office in the state or the federal level, the next day they're trying to get donations. I don't believe in that stuff. I believe in the people trying to figure out who they want to vote for and who represents their personal ideas. It means nothing to me, but when we had the two senators from the state of Washington, there was an argument about drug prices, and they voted not to change it, but both of them had, one had 500,000 in donations, another one had 75,000. Were they representing the people or were they representing their donations? I don't believe that you as people need to have somebody donate money to you to run for office. And if you do, then God love you, I want to lose. Because if it's money, if it's signs on the street, advertising in the newspaper, it's an insult to my intelligence. I don't want that. And so if you're, I just don't agree with donations to politics, period.
Okay, thank you. Let's take another question from the back of the room then.
Hello, I'm Jean, and this isn't a new problem. Well, it's kind of a new problem in Port Townsend, but the issue of affordable housing and how many young people that I know and how many retired people I know who cannot live here anymore. And I see a lot of people coming in with really expensive houses. I also see a lot of houses being vacant. I would like to know your position on doing a real graduated property tax. Because right now you pay tax on what you get. But if a real graduated tax, so that over a certain amount of value in a house, there's a luxury tax on it or an increased tax rate.
Okay, so Mr. Arthur, you'll answer this first. And just to repeat the question, what's your position on a graduated property tax to help address our affordable housing problem?
Well, I love the affordable housing situation because I think that we need to create incentives to create affordable housing, not regulations, not permit fees, not all these things that the city just loves to do. But when you talk about affordable housing, I figured it out one time, and this is my calculation. I'm only a high school graduate, so give me a little pity. But I figure that it takes 500 square feet per person. So if you have a house that's 1,200 square feet, you should have two people in it. And when our house, we had 4,000 feet in our first house, our second house, and we had eight people living in it. We had our grandparents downstairs. We had four kids. And when you look at some of the houses around town and you say, okay, I'd like to have a border or a something. Oh, we wait till you see the regulations for having a border. You can't believe it. And, you know, parking lots and, you know, sprinkler systems and all this stuff. That's not affordable. That's not in. So I contend that if you want to make it affordable, you create incentives. And those incentives are if you have a house and you have a couple boarders, maybe you pay half the property tax. Maybe your water bill doesn't change because of use. Maybe there's a lot of things you could do if you really wanted to. But we have most of the people in town here don't want things to change. They want it the way it is.
And time's up. Okay, Ms. Howard, state your opinion on or your position on a graduated property tax to address the affordable housing problem.
Washington State has one of the most regressive tax systems in America. That is not a perfect solution. What we actually need is overarching tax reform for this state. I have not taken enough time to study what you're proposing to actually be able to answer that directly, but I have worked and as a representative of Port Townsend, gone to Olympia to talk to elected officials there about tax reform for Washington State.
Thank you. We have time for one more from the back. Does anyone like to ask a question at the mic? Okay, looks like not. That's fine. I have another one, and I think this will be our final question for these two candidates, and it's kind of for the kids. Where is climate change on your agenda? Ms. Howard?
On my agenda, that's an interesting way to phrase that question. The thing is, it is an overarching piece of all of the agendas. If it's not something that's thought about in all other considerations, then we're not doing it right. It's going to happen no matter what, so we have to figure out, and again, we're not going to have a perfect solution, but I would rather have everybody having imperfect efforts than not thinking about it at all. I don't have a solution from my seat as a Port Townsend City Council member, but I would like to take the time as a community to figure that out.
Thank you. Mr. Arthur, where is climate change on your agenda?
I think climate change is partly God's fault, and partly we can make small accommodations to lower our personal effects on the environment, but the issue is much broader than I as an individual can fix, and there are other things that are much more important in this community right now. So I would do what I can do. Jermaine and I, we get in the car and we go three or four places instead of going back and forth and back and forth. I talk to businesses and they say that people are come in five times a day. There's people that drive a lot. But God willing, we're either going to get better by planting trees and woods and by and that's one of the reasons I live in Port Townsend is because I love the environment here, and I wouldn't live in Los Angeles. When I smoke cigarettes, people used to say, "God, that's bad for you," and I says, "You smoke cigarettes here, I can smoke a pack of Camels, but down in Los Angeles, just living in Los Angeles was like smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. because of the pollution and so on. And a lot of places you go and you look. So I kind of avoided the polluted places. And I try to be a good citizen, but I'm a flea on a dog's back. You can wag me all you want, but there's a lot of people in this world that need to be better about the environment. And I do my part, but that's the best I can do.
We needed to release these candidates with a great round of applause. But first, we are going to hear their one-minute closing statements from each of them. Thank you. And since Mr. Arthur was the last one to answer a question, we will have him give his closing statement first.
Well, I guess we're lucky because when I use up my minute, I'll be out of here. But the thing is that I'm just a normal citizen. I do things. I do the best I can, and I don't think for other people. I don't think for any of you. I tell you how I think, and you can make up your own mind. You are responsible to do what you think is right, not what somebody tells you. Whenever I get up in the morning and I think I'm going to go out and do something, I go look in the mirror because that old guy in the mirror, he can't do that anymore. And I love the idea of being part of the community. I always have. And if you want me to talk longer than a minute, you got to elect me.
Thank you. And Ms. Howard, your closing statement.
I would like to thank Mr. Arthur for filing to run against me because it gave me an opportunity to speak with you this evening. Additionally, I'd like to thank him for running the softest campaign. So I appreciate that as well. I think that you have a unique opportunity to vote for an incumbent for change. So please vote Howard. Thank you.
Let's give them both a big round of applause.